started. It was very useful for me. I don't know whether it was for you, that we had a good question session yesterday. One of the problems that you have to understand is that when I talk, I talk like an artist, and not like a speechifier. I talk very abstractly. And it's a kind of once again a personal thing, as we've been sharing right along. I was unable to talk until I was 17, and on one Tuesday morning in my 17th year, I just simply got up and said, "Good morning, Mother," and she passed out under the kitchen table. And from that time to this time, we have been unable to figure out why I talk, because I have no mouth. And that's true. I have no mouth. And so the doctors say, whatever you have to say, say it now, because someday you could wake up and not be able to say, "Good morning, Mother." And so I talk in ways that try and make the most out of every word. The problem is that the word then almost becomes abstract, and you have to figure out then what it is I've got in mind. And some of you are doing really well at that, and some of you aren't doing very well at all. So if you want to repeat the questions that you gave me yesterday, I'll just keep saying it in different ways until I hit you with the right answer. But that may never happen. As one of you said, I'm more confused about art now than I was before, and I'm not sure whether that was our intention or not, but it's obvious that an awful lot of art cannot be verbalized. It's like Martha Graham said about her dancing when somebody asked her what she meant by that particular dance, and she said, "If I could have said it, I wouldn't have danced it." Well, you know, some of that is true about art, but the problem is not all of it is true. And when artists get to the point where they're unwilling to explain as a way of making your question make you yourself sound stupid, then I have very little patience for that. Your questions are legitimate, and I'll tell you frankly that it's my firm belief that if you do not know something, then you can't give a word to it. If you really know something, you are able to give a word to it. Now, a lot of people don't agree with that. But for me, I'm not saying it isn't real. An awful lot of what is real to me, I can't give a word to. And it's very real. And it's very important. I just don't understand it. But if I understand it, I am able to give a word to it. I believe that with all my heart. Now, the thing is, unfortunately, most of the really important things I don't understand. like God, like faith, like art. So the word business is a kind of a feeble activity for me, but at the same time, it's a very precious activity for me. Very precious. And I wear out after a while. And sometimes I start, after a long discussion, start reverting to my pre-speech pattern, which is pretty disgusting. And stuff comes out my nose and things like that. So let's let's start with some more questions, if you have any. I should verify, I was trying very hard to say yesterday that hunger and feeding the poor and visiting the prisoners and taking care of the widows and the fatherless children is the work of the church, but not exclusively. Some of you got upset that I said taking care of the poor wasn't the work of the church. I hope I didn't say that. If I did say that, I didn't mean it. It is the work of the church. It is everybody's work. It is everybody's job. What I was trying to pull out of you yesterday was, what can the church do that nobody else can do? What are we empowered and even required to do as people of the body of Christ that other people are neither able or empowered to do? And those things that I am able to come up with personally focus around worship, because no one has a God like our God. And I also include in worship giving an account of the hope that is in us, which may even be to strangers. In addition, I count also the forgiveness of sins as a unique activity of people of the body. And in fact, it is being forgiven that is what leads us into being worshiping people. Those, the worship and the forgiveness of sins business are integrated. They're together. They're very, very close. It's why I have such problems in the Lutheran liturgy, particularly in the one that I grew up with. You know it, and I won't keep repeating it. Where in the book it says, and we still have it as an option in the green hymnal, I, by virtue of my office as a called and ordained servant of the word, announce the grace of God unto all of you, and in the stead and by the command of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, I forgive you all your sins in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. By virtue of my office, I announce grace to you, and I forgive you your sins. And yet, immediately before that, we said, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, and certainly not by virtue of our office as called and ordained servants of the word, by our office as priests baptized. Remember the little chasuble? Priesthood of all believers. So I got some problems with ordination. And once again, that's a personal problem. For most of his adult life, at least the part that he had me around, my father, who was a seminary professor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis for 38 years, until they discovered he was a heretic. They kicked him out. But for all that time, he tried his best to keep me from being ordained. That was one of his goals in life, to prevent me from becoming ordained. And the last thing I told Papa was that I was going to wait till he died. And I was going to get ordained. But I just didn't have the heart. So I said, okay, I'll never get ordained, Papa. I think he went to heaven happy about that, about other things as well. But he says, if you're a painter who preaches, they won't listen to your sermons. And if you're a preacher who paints, they won't look at your pictures. What a sharp guy. So he says, just do what you're doing. Do what you're doing. So he had some problems with ordination as well. I think he suspected that I wanted to do it because I loved him. And that for him was not a good enough reason. Okay, so we forgive. We announce grace to each other. And it is possible to do that visually. It is very necessary to do that visually, because we learn the truth with our eyes. The truth comes in a good measure through our eyes. And this has been said so many times. Oh, taste and see how gracious the Lord is. What a beautiful, taste. And you want liturgy you can taste and see. And I'm afraid I'm a closet Orthodox. You know, go to the Orthodox Church. Oh, my gosh, the smells. Woo, the music. And no pews. No, everybody stands. And they walk around, and the guy is up there in the most outrageous outfits. I think maybe that's really why I wanted to be ordained. You got to wear some of the really spiffy outfits, and I would have made my own, you know, and we would have been in real trouble. I probably would have made myself an archbishop. At any rate, they got the smells. Incense. You can hear the water. People walk around. He's reading the epistle lesson from one side up front, and he says, okay, everybody over here while we read the epistle lesson in the fourth tone, and everybody just kind of walks on over and stands in front of him. And then he walks on, follow me over to the other side, and we will now read the gospel lesson in the fifth tone. Everybody out there knows it and is singing it, and there's no instruments. They don't allow instruments in the Orthodox Church. No organs, no banjos, no nothing. But everybody knows it, and they sing in harmony. And it's the basso profundos that just make my teeth itch. Ospodi pomilui, ospodi pomilui. Oh, my shit. Oh, it's like heaven. It's like, you know, just dying and going to music heaven. Great stuff. And it's all that sight and sound, and whoever died that week is laid out there. You know that? In the Orthodox Church, if you died that week, they lay you with the lid up out on the side of the church, and it's also awake on Sunday morning. If you are in the Orthodox tradition, they advise you to die on Saturday. You know, if you die on Monday, And do you know that's where incense comes from? That's why they've got all that incense. Oh, I'm not kidding. Well, at any rate, it is through all of our stuff. Luther, you should love the Lord. How? With all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. All. And our education system atrophies half our brain. I don't want to get into the right brain, but you know how that works. My left is atrophied, and that's just as bad. I don't have a bottom line mentality, so I don't know when the boat's leaving. You just keep working until you're done, and then just get the next boat. You know, and if you don't have the right color, you look around and you find you're using house paint. I'm using siding paint on this mural right now. I don't know if that's going to dry or not. That's not my problem. My problem is all the heart, all the soul, all the mind, and now all the paint. Wherever you can find it. Okay? Whatever you can do. But it is not meet, right, or salutary that you only give half of your brain to the Lord. Especially since that's also the half you're using for yourself. If you got to divide it up, give the right side to God and keep the left side for yourself, because the left side is the most boring. And I think one of the cardinal sins in this world is boredom. boring teachers ought to be shot.
Or transformed.
Hey, shooting would transform a couple of them. But no, you're right. Gosh, you are so charitable. I'm sorry. But I just am up to the gunnels with boring teachers. Just fed up. Will not tolerate it. I do not know in my heart of hearts what God requires most of me, whether I should be obedient or whether I should be creative. Sometimes they contradict. Sometimes they fight. Being really full of imagination sometimes contradicts the obedience part. And then you got to make a choice. And I always opt for the imagination. The rich young ruler. What must I do to have life? To have life. What must I do? And God says, obey the law. Don't you love this passage? Have you ever really stopped the story of the rich young ruler, Jesus? What a great... Jesus says, obey the law. And the rich young ruler says, well, I've done that. I mean, if I were God, this guy would get struck down by lightning. I'm just... No. The hell you say? I've obeyed the law. The nerve of you. I don't care how rich you are. That's a terrible thing to say. But Jesus says, okay, well, the next thing you got to do is sell everything you got, give it to the poor, and follow me. In other words, obedience to the law is not everything you got to do to have life. Because the law kills and the Spirit giveth life. And I don't think just selling everything you got, giving it to the poor, and going to, with Jesus, he didn't say, you know, down the block. And he didn't say, you know, for three weeks volunteer on the staff here. He didn't say anything. He just says follow. That is not only obedience that allows you to do a thing like that. That's imagination. I think we are required in order to have life to be imaginative. And that is not something you are born with. That is something you learn and something you develop. Imagination is a discipline. It's a discipline. I resent people telling me how I was born an artist. What a gift to be an artist. Poop. Like, you know, sprung full grown from my mother's womb with a paintbrush in my hand. Ooh, that would have smarted. I would, you know, carry it. No, ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Learned thing. I hated art. Absolutely hated it. It was simply the only way I could make myself understood. I no more loved to draw pictures than a paraplegic loves his chair. Art was my crutch. You just had to do it. And you just have to be imaginative. Christians have no other option. Okay, some questions. Anything about art. That's all I know. Anything?
Quick question, you just mentioned, you know, that art was your crutch. Why did you go into art then? I mean, if you despised it almost as your, if I understand you right, why did you go into art? Did you feel a calling to do it? Or was it, you know, just your only way of expressing you for yourself?
Well, if...
So it's still, yeah. I mean, if it was the only way you could express yourself, then it was a gift from God in a way. because not everybody can express himself in art. Some people, I could never express myself in art. I would have to do it in a different way.
Sure, sure. We all have to do it in very specific ways that relate to us. The need to express in art was a gift from God. The ability was not.
You had to develop it.
You bet. And I think everybody does. And however it is you express yourself, I'll bet you have to develop it. You gotta learn it, you gotta practice it, you gotta study it. You know, you just don't go out full blown doing that thing. But it is a call. I think you're right. There is a call. By the time I was able to speak, I was able to art.
I was thinking of Duane too, before he could play the piano as he does now. I bet you he cannot count the hours he had to sit there and practice.
Oh. Oh boy. And didn't you just sit there last night coveting?
Yes.
Coveting? I can't even think as fast as he can make his fingers move. I thought, by the time halfway up one of those runs, I was like, my God, I'm out of control. Where am I gonna go? Oh no. I don't know. What was he thinking about, the note, or was he two pages ahead? You know, and all of that. Oh, just, I mean, shoot. When I do a painting, at least I can go over my mistake. You know, he's left hanging out there in limbo. Can't do that. He's going to have to do the whole thing over. Oh, it's just outrageously beautiful.
And for those of us who sat behind him, you couldn't even see that fast.
Oh, well, hard. And yeah, well, you, I just, I, you know, I don't want to look at the keyboard. I just don't want to look at the keyboard. So I looked at you. And you were looking and going. That was a funny, I was just cracking up watching her.
As fast as he went, we'd never known how many mistakes he made.
Well, that's probably true. That's probably true. But
he didn't make any.
He'll be the first to tell you that he did.
I talked to him afterwards and he said he left out a lot of notes.
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah. Particularly in the Ravel. Yeah. Yeah, particularly in the Ravel. But my gosh, that's totally beside the point. You know. I think if he didn't make any mistakes, he'd probably just give up those pieces and go on to something else. But he's going to keep doing it till he gets it right. I feel the same way about God and creation. You know, we look at it all and it's so perfect and it's so beautiful. Nuts, it's out of control. It's out of control. Who but God could have designed creatures that would have rebelled against him? That's just bizarre. I mean, if I were God, I would not have done that. I would not. And the creativity of God is not the first 7 days of creation. That, as far as I'm concerned, is not the creativity of God. What is really creative about God is that when it all came unglued, God decided not just to wipe it out and start over. The real creativity is making something out of what you got. Not starting, not just wiping it all. Trying to resurrect it. The death of God's Son. What an imagination. What an imagination. No God but ours with an imagination like that. Other gods would have turned into clouds. Io. Or golden showers. And gone around the neighborhood doing hanky-panky. Time out, you know. See how human you can get and still be a god. Never grow old. Never cry. Get angry, but then be a petulant god, like a baby, and destroy something. Not our God. Our God is very creative. Otherwise, we would not be here. And I'm not talking about birth. I'm talking about redemption.
Mm-hmm. Your remarks earlier about the responsibility of the church to feed the poor, I think it all revolves about the definition of the church. If the church is simply a building or a corporate body, no. But if the church is the people of God, the communion of believers, then yes, it becomes our responsibility as Christian people to feed the poor. So it is the responsibility of the church.
It is. It absolutely is. And I never said otherwise.
No.
It is just not the unique responsibility of the church. It is the response. And in fact, it is the responsibility of the church building to feed the poor. Uh-huh. How's that grab you? I think most of us build these little buildings as though they were country clubs, exclusive property of the people who paid for it. You got problems if that's your attitude. Every church building is a civic building if it's in a city.
But isn't it unfortunate that we have to keep them locked today?
Oh, sure.
That's one of the greatest...
Well, we don't have to.
...crimes against humankind today, that we have to keep our church buildings locked.
We don't have to. We do in order to preserve our stuff. Right. We just don't want our stuff taken. That's another advantage of having worship spaces which are empty, which have a sense of emptiness that calls forth people to bring their things on worship and then take them away when worship isn't happening. But most of the history of the church is a history of a collection agency. We got all these goodies. In building, in remodeling a church, the first thing people ask for is storage space for the banners. We don't have enough storage space for all our banners. What do you got all those banners for anyway? Well, that's our banner collection. What do you mean? In other words, we know already next Easter what we're going to haul out and hang up. Oh, crikey, what a boring thing. It just really pains me to see all of the expense going into vestments and paraments, and then the church can finally say, we now have our complete set. Oh, I mean, that's kind of a goal, but shoot, that means that there's no other way of doing the altar or vesting the pastor anymore, because we've already got it nailed down from now until kingdom come. And that's kind of sad. That's too bad. Better to spend the money a good set of paraments for the altar and the pulpit, you know, that, I mean, you can spend $800 to $1,000 for one set, the green set. Let's say you got five sets, you know, that's $5,000. Better you should have a budget in art for 1/10 of that annually and have materials available so that for every festival people could make new things. For every separate festival. We have a congregation in New Orleans, I think I told you. Every Sunday they make their own bulletin and they make their own banner for every service. If someone dies, someone makes a bulletin and someone makes a banner. If some folks get married, they make a bulletin and a banner for the wedding. For every worship event in that church, a new bulletin and a new banner every time. And then they give them away. Or they burn them. Or they recycle them. And who does all that? The most creative, imaginative folks in the congregation, the kids, the children, usually the ones before you get into the fourth grade, at which time they are de-geniused. Art education. Bad stuff, bad, bad, bad. Just give them materials and let them go. They know more than the teacher does anyway. Just let them go. But at any rate, you know, the kiddos, they have text study every Thursday down in New Orleans. The pastor goes over the lessons for next week. And then the kids get together and talk about what kind of a design would describe what the pastor just said. And they do that right there on the spot. They got a half an hour to come up with an image. and it's put on a spirit duplicator or potato prints or mimeograph or any kind of thing you want, you know, they turn those things out, then they take a section of that or the whole thing and they blow that up on an opaque projector and they make a banner out of it that night, Thursday night. And the child whose design is chosen for that service also has to be an usher. It takes a little longer for the people to get into church because, you know, Mikey is standing there with his artwork. It's got Mikey written from the lower left to the upper right, but still he wants to make sure that everybody sees that this is Mikey's design. You know, I did this, this is mine, you can go in now. And then the big banner taken from Mikey's design, affirming the kiddos. Just lifting up the hearts of the little kids.
Rich, yeah. Isn't it true that the priceless examples of African tribal sculpture in our museums were made as occasional throwaway?
Absolutely.
Thrown into the bush after the ritual?
Absolutely. So and so were some of the priceless things of Cezanne. Right? Thrown into the bush. Thrown into the bush. His landlady went out and collected them. You know.
Van Gogh sold for $45 million recently, and he threw a lot of stuff away.
Van Gogh sold one painting for a beer and a cheese sandwich. And just got $45 million. A sunflower. Boy, that makes me mad. I think I'm going to go into sunflowers. We do have the resources. People get very upset with me, but I contend, people do get very upset with this, but I contend that there is no community that calls itself Christian, that does not have within it all that is necessary for adequate and appropriate worship. I have just put the publishing houses out of business. The ecclesiastical warehouse part. You can do it. We have come up with a kind of definition of excellence that implies that if it's going to be excellent, we're going to have to pay more than we can afford, and it is going to have to come from somewhere else. That's our two requirements. As a result, we have created within our congregation the sense that the people themselves do not have resources for adequate praise. That's heresy. That is heresy. You never found anything like that in Scripture. It's absolute heresy. What makes you think you can buy the resources for adequate praise? You do them. You are them. And I'm not saying this doesn't require learning. Of course it requires learning. I am not advocating a cult of the amateur. I am advocating being careful. Full of care. To just simply write out a check and order your processional cross from the catalog is really careless. It's careless. Be careful. Take care of what you have. Mostly of yourself, and think better of yourself and what you are able to contribute to the community of praise. You can do that. Anything else? Yes.
You said that the children make the banners in a half hour, and then one.
No, I said the children make the design in a half an hour, and then they put that on an opaque.
But then you said the one child whose design is chosen. So then what happens to all the other children's designs?
They've gone through an exegetics.
What does that mean?
They have learned about the Bible. visually.
So one is who chooses the one, and then do the others take theirs home?
I don't know how they do that anymore, but it used to be the woman who was in charge of the project, and she had the kids. Just put them all up on the board, and sometimes they took turns, you know, like, hey, he got it last Sunday, let's do somebody else, even if his is the best. I mean, you know, they find a way of doing that. I mean, one girl said she wanted to do each one individually. Each bulletin. 600 bulletins. She didn't want to crank them out. And she got, it was for Pentecost. And she got chicken feathers. And she pasted a feather on each bulletin and then did a little red crayon mark underneath, which was like a little, like that. Great. And of course, you know what they had to do for the banner then. They got this big piece of red paper and they glued the whole sucker and threw chicken feathers at it. And Pentecost comes and they march down the aisle with this thing with feathers just flying in all directions. Whoa, is that great? Is that great? The Spirit blowing where it listeth and returneth not again. Is that great? Yeah. And it is disposable. I mean, it is gone. The banner was gone by the time it got to the altar. Marvelous. Marvelous. What grace. Anything else? We'll look at a few slides. Yeah, please.
What do you use for communion?
What do I?
What would you have? We have silver trays. What would you recommend?
Oh, that's a dirty question. I'm sorry. That really is. That's a toughie. That's a real toughie. I like myself ceramic chalices. I like ceramic chalices. I tell you, Frank, and okay, talk to me about diseases. You know, talk to me about diseases. If everybody who was so concerned about these diseases, you know, worried about going to church and getting disease, if you're worried about that, you really should stay home. You could get killed on the way to church. Just going to church, you're going to get killed. If you're going to worry about all of this, I just got problems with that. It's my, you know, it's the atrophy of the left side here that means I just don't worry about that. I tell you, we went to Betel. You know Betel? Have you heard of Betel? Some congregations collect stamps for Betel. It's spelled Bethel. Okay? And they pronounce it Betel. It is a community where 90% of the people are in extreme sickness. Not just epilepsy, but I mean these people are walking around padded, completely padded with helmets and so forth, because they will just simply go into an epileptic seizure right on the sidewalk and do damage to themselves if they're not padded. Birth defects, the most hideous, the most egregious. You want to read more about Betel, read Ennahong, Bright Valley of Hope, Bright Valley of Love. Love, Bright Valley of Love, okay? Ennahong, beautiful book. They don't like it at Betel because it makes Betel sound like it isn't a sweat place. It's kind of lovely. But there's some good history. Hitler tried to have his doctor set up shop there and work on, you know, purifying the race. And they wouldn't have it. A fellow by the name of Bodelschwink was in charge and just simply kept the Nazis out. Amazing, amazing place. On one of my I usually take a conducted tour to Europe or to Russia or to China or Middle East or wherever once a year. And the last tour we went to Europe, we went to all the cathedrals. I mean, just all the great stuff. And when we were done, we ended up at Betel. Not great cathedrals, but people who are learning to do art because it is helpful to hand-eye coordination and all the therapy that's involved that art is able to provide. We visited the ceramic shop, and there were two guys who were just so happy. They were roomies. They had a beautiful, they wanted us to see their room, which was bright yellow and white. It was the least institutional feeling of any institution I've ever been in. I get really Lysol. I faint at the smell of Lysol. I just get woozy. And this was just absolutely, they had fresh flowers in a little pot in the window and pretty pictures on the wall. These guys were in the ceramic shop. This, the one guy was making a pinch pot. And his hands were strapped to his side and his fingers looked like lobster claws. And he was just doing fiddling like this and drooling all over the place. And he had a bib and this great, great beatific smile. The other guy was dipping in the glaze. He was doing the glaze and he had a paintbrush in the one hand, and he would go, he would spin the wheel like that, and then he would go and hit the pot with the brush. And half the time he'd miss, and when he hit it, he would just laugh, white, he would say, white, and a white dot on the side of the pot, white. And he'd spin it and hit it, and then he would take his other claw and he would go inside the pot and spread his fingers and just lift it up and dip it into a glaze and set it on a rack. The two guys making little pots. And at the end of our visit, these two guys came up. We went to their room and they showed us the room, and then they gave us one of their little pots. One of the little pots with white dots all around it. White. I'll never forget the way he said that. And that night was our last night of the tour. We went home and we decided that for the last night, we were a congregation on the road. We had no pastor, so they called me to be pastor for the group for the summer. And I was registered with the synod to be that pastor for the duration of the tour. And that night we had the Eucharist. And of course the chalice was the little white. And I'll tell you frankly, Jesus never had a holier grail than this. I mean, people looked at this and just wept. Not out of pity, but out of the gift that was to our group. What imagination, what skill, what energy. And it was holy. So I'm not saying, the problem I have with the shot glass thing is that it is just too kind of Horn and Hardart, with the little assembly line kind of thing, and I have problems with that, and even as I describe it, I use a denigrating term like shot glass, and that's not fair. And so I mean, it's not like the wine comes in the container. It's not like the container is a means of grace. It's the wine that helps us. And we got to get the wine, and we got to get the bread. But these little wafers they make that out of, our wafers, most of the Lutheran wafers, they come from the world's largest manufacturer of fish food. I'm not kidding. And now just grab one of those things and you'll see what I mean now. You know, as you try and get that off the roof of your mouth before the wine comes, it's like wallpaper up there. It's like, remember the lady that said, that doesn't look like any Jesus I ever saw? Well, that don't taste like any bread I ever tasted. Whatever happened to bread? So all I'm saying is I'm not all that concerned about some of the tools, but I am very concerned that what we evidence are people helping. People helping. People doing this. That there is a means of grace and people are a part of the means. We try too hard to make everything kind of antiseptic. There are ways in which you can do that. That's why I kind of like the common cup. Simply because I find there are ways in which, you know, you can dip the bread in there and take it without putting your mouth on the cup. There are other ways with the cup that has the little spout on it so that they can pour it into your chalice. But the idea that we are one body, that we are whatever we are in this little congregation, we are together in this activity for the purpose of lifting each other up. And whatever we can do that will support that, I am for it. Whatever, I am for it. Okay, let me show you a few slides. Yeah, please. These are just stories now. You know where it is? Oh, let's... There you go. Yeah, I think that this one is in... No, that's okay. But there's that all. Oh, they're okay. Just to emphasize what we're talking about now, three stories, or I don't. Are we comfy? Just show you some examples. And I'm afraid all I have are examples of things that I've taken part in. I think the stories are important, and so that's why I'm using these examples. I don't know how many of you are members of ALC congregations that were asked to do ribbons for the last ALC convention. Did you do them? Well, maybe you'll find them in here, because that's what this is. What we wanted to do was to make a tapestry, and we wanted all of the members of the ALC to submit ribbons 2 inches wide by 42 inches long, and they should have something of their church on those ribbons, some identifying mark. And what we would do during the convention, I think this is upside down. Yeah, no, not necessarily. It's sideways. Yeah. What we wanted to do was, after the day of the convention was over and the business was done, we would take these ribbons, and from about 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening until about 6 in the morning, we would begin weaving these things so that every time they came, every morning they came, it would be a different thing. And we would eventually use all the ribbons that were submitted. Well, incredible variety. All these people. I'm afraid that what happened was that mostly women got involved. Actually, it came out to the churches through the ALCW, and so that's probably the case. But there were unbelievable stuff. Some things were just simply written on with magic marker. But there was Hardanger. There were some funny, funny things. Look at that Ord, Nebraska at the very bottom. Mm-hmm. That what they wanted their church to be known for. Extraordinary Abel Skeever. I mean, some of these things were just absolutely wild. There was Hardanger, there was needlepoint, cross-stitching. One congregation had cross-stitched the name of every member of the congregation on the thing. Do you know, I don't even know how to pronounce it very well. Hmong, the Hmong people, Minneapolis has a great deal. There's a congregation of Hmong, and they submitted a ribbon of that incredible stitchery, just solid. Oh, just amazing stuff. I wonder if you can tell where that thing with the fringe is from. Honolulu. I was surprised they didn't submit a whole grass skirt. We had a beaded one from a Native American congregation in North Dakota. And what was funny was that I get so excited. All of the congregations, really, the pastors kept coming up, the representatives at the convention kept coming up and trying to find their thing. One pastor kept coming up, he says, have you come across St. John's yet? And I... Oh, pastors are the funniest people in the world. And I said, hey, what color is it? And he says, white. Oh, I said, yeah, it's the eighth vertical row from the other end. And he went down there and it was there. He said, thank you very much. Look at the pulled stitch over on the far right. I tell you, I was so amazed. And people would come up. They would come up and try and find their thing. One pastor found his, and what we were doing was weaving these things. And he didn't like it that the women went to all that work and then it was being covered up by other things. So he pulled it out and stuck it on the top. And so that night I would take it and weave it back in. And then the next morning he'd pull it out, stick it on the top again. You know, we had this little running dialogue of what it meant to be in the church. You know, he's a very pushy guy.
Who won?
I did, because after the convention was over, I took the whole thing down. Now we got all these ribbons. And we don't know what to do. Well, we do know what to do with them, but we don't know if they'll let us do it. I want to take the very finest of these and weave them together permanently into a tapestry for the new church building, the new headquarters, and make it just a beautiful, spectacular thing. And I don't want to see all this beautiful work just simply, you know, gone, because it's just, I mean, see? Isn't that fun? I mean, just people were just not leaving alone. Now this is how we started with these vertical stripes, red vertical stripes, because red was the season of the church year there. So we just laid the whole thing with red, and then we started interspersing those with some of the ribbon. All right, and I mean the kids and everybody would come up constantly just to watch it. So at the beginning it was quite vertical and red, and then it went through various metamorphoses, and it started turning into white. Then we started doing more horizontals, weaving this thing onto that. That's the way it finally looked, with 1,400 of these ribbons woven and interwoven. We also did a processional cross, which I showed you the other day yesterday in our little cross talk. That big processional cross right in the middle is made out of paper. We made that at the guild, and we carried that in all the processions.
Where was this on display? Where?
At the convention in the auditorium in Minneapolis. It was behind the speakers platforms and the desks that were where all of the people were sitting, the secretary and the president and
Columbus, Ohio and Seattle and places.
Yeah, this was the last of the ALC conventions, and the Columbus thing was the constituting convention of the new church of the ELCA. So that's the final event. Now, in this case, what we were trying to suggest is that there are ways in which people with their own gifts can participate in a unique way in a celebration. There is, I guarantee you, nothing like that as excellent and marvelous as that that has ever happened on the face of the earth. That's a guarantee. And that just simply came from the people. It is a folk art. And it was the best that was ever done. So to say that within our congregations we can't do the best is just not true. Okay, a couple other stories. Church wanted me to do a mural. This congregation feeds 700 people every night for free, street people. And they said, would you come to our church? And we want to give them something to do besides just eat. We'd like them to work on an art project. And so they said, let's do a mural. And so we worked with the street people. And this lady here is what every congregation needs. She is a scrounger. Every congregation needs a scrounger. Somebody to go out and get free materials. Freebies. She went around the whole city gathering free materials, free lumber, free paint. The only problem is that at that particular time, the people were most willing to give up the color that most of the paint stores were willing to give up was pink. And so we had a kind of a pinkish mural. In fact, we had to extend all the colors with pink, which was okay if you're doing red. But it got a little tricky when you're doing blue, you know, and you try and make pink blue. But it worked out okay. We just simply decided instead of putting Masonite panels up 4x8 sheets, we would paint them in as close to a spectrum as we could get and just lay them along the side of this big dining hall and then start talking to people about what it was they wanted. And then they started painting. And they divided these panels up into four major themes. The black history of the congregation, the sanctuary program, because this was a sanctuary church, the free food program, and also justice, because this mural would be seen by the prisoners on the other side of the street in the city jail. I, in my naivete, had heard about bag ladies, but I had never heard about bag children. There were bag children. There were little kids. This little girl down here is 13 years old, and she was a bag child. She lived on the street. I didn't know quite what to do. I was very tempted to adopt her, but I was there for only a short time. One day she asked me, because she had a good day, she got a lot of stuff in her grocery cart, which she obviously stole from the local Safeway, was really full, and she asked me to help her push it to her home. She says only two blocks. So I pushed her cart to her home, and she says, here it is. And we stopped, and her home was a dumpster in the back of an apartment complex. And she says it's really going to be hell tomorrow night because they pick up the garbage tomorrow. She says it's always a lot warmer when it's full. Now, I don't know how you respond to that, but my first response was, what in heaven's name am I doing asking her to paint? To do a painting? That was my first response, and I went to the priest of this particular parish, and he said something very interesting to me. At first it felt good because it got me off the hook, but after a while I realized that it was really an intense ministry he was asking me to be about. He said, our job is not only to feed the hungry, our job is to be with them. to be there. Not to ship them stuff, but to be there with them. And he said, what you are doing with your art is not just simply teaching them something or giving them an option to think about something else besides their poverty. You are just simply being there. And that's part of our ministry. Oh, they got all excited. They designed it. One guy, we're going to go over in towards our 12:30 mark. I hope that's all right with you. One guy, we couldn't think of a thing for justice. This guy was 6'4" and black as the ace of spades. And when he stood up and we said, you know, when we said, well, what does justice look like? And somebody said, she's a lady with blindfolds and a scale. And this guy stood up and he was madder than hops. He was just angry. And he was also huge and angry. And he also had a vocabulary, which I am not at liberty to repeat in polite company, but you knew exactly what he meant at all times. He said, justice ain't no lady with no blindfold holding no scales like at the house across the street. He says, I've been in that house and there ain't no justice there. And so we said, well, what do you think justice looks like? And he stood there while we waited, because we thought if we suggested something and he got mad, he was going to break something. And he just stood there, and he tried to think, and he was really seriously trying to think about something. And finally, his face just lit up. His front teeth were missing, but he had a grin that was just from ear to ear. And we said, well, yeah, what is it? He says, it's like rivers flowing down. The guy knew his Bible. The guy knew his Old Testament. And so that's what it was. We were afraid to do anything else. So we had rivers flowing down. And then we put him up. There's the guy taking care of it. It should be standing on the end where he is working. But you'll see that it's rivers flowing down. In fact, we tried to get it so that it would actually be rivers. We had blue paint on there, and then we threw water all over it so that the water would come down and make the paint look like rivers flowing down. He had a great time. He made a tremendous mess all over the floor. But boy, did he have a great time. He took ownership of this justice part of the mural, and only people who he invited personally would be allowed to work on the justice section. That was a whole redefinition of justice right there. And then we put it up. Justice is that second one over there. And the black roots going in from the left, there was...
it's community thing, so it's kind of hard. This was the sanctuary program, two doors.